Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last and the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This November 10th, 2015 edition, episode 63 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico. I'm Mike Sleeve along with the good Dr. Guy McPherson. Our thanks to Afrozen for his theme song contribution, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. Today's show, we will have what I call a mega climate update, and if we have time, we'll get to some of the other issues, like discussing living in the United States as the world burns, the Greenland ice sheet, the connection between our technology and lack of empathy, the encryption predicament the government finds itself in, commodifying women in China, California's electric car wars, and how empire wars around the world and drags its feet with refugees. Plus, Guy's camping trip, and we'll actually bring up the theme song since I received a message on it. It's also a call-in show, too. We'll be taking your calls, so please dial us up. It's toll-free, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And it's not a call-in show unless you call in. That'd be great.
That would be great.
You want to start us off with the climate change update?
That would be great, thanks. And the best way to make me stop blathering about climate change is to call the toll-free number. I don't know if you caught that the first three or four times we mentioned it, but it's 888-874-4888. I'd be remiss if I failed to mention the environmental news that has everybody on Twitter and elsewhere. Obama's deep-fixing the Keystone XL pipeline. After overseeing the building of 50,000 miles of similar pipelines during his tenure, and after being heavily supported financially by Warren Buffett, who owns the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad system that earns $2 billion per year carrying oil via rail. The Sierra Club asks us to ignore reality and claim a huge victory has been won. The mainstream media is replete with stories of Obama securing his legacy on climate change. Yes, his legacy on climate change. This is the president who said in 2013, quote, "We produce more oil at home than we have in 15 years. We produce more natural gas than ever before," end quote. He seems quite proud of the fact that the extraction of fossil fuels here in the homeland has reached all-time highs, much of it via fracking and other environmentally horrific activities, yet he's viewed as a climate change hero for nixing a redundant, hence irrelevant, pipeline. I'll quote Einstein, who told us long ago all we need to know about the populace. Two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity, and I'm not sure about the universe. This is why people send me hate mail, I'm pretty sure. After only slightly more than a year of Obama-style heroism to go, we get a new president. If we only pick the right one, I'm sure he or she will stop climate change, attend to social justice, and repair the environmental damage created by those darn conservatives or liberals. Or whomever we're blaming this week for the predicaments created by civilization.
I blame voters.
Yeah. Yes, I'm with George Carlin on this one. You can't blame me. I didn't vote.
For him.
Voting only encourages them. All right. According to a paper in the October 21st, 2015 issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, quote, The observed dissolved organic carbon loss rates are among the highest reported for permafrost carbon and demonstrate the potential importance of low molecular weight dissolved organic carbon in driving the rapid metabolism of Pleistocene-age permafrost carbon upon thaw and the outgassing of CO2 through the atmosphere by soils and nearby inland waters. I had to go to my dictionary about 35 times to figure out what that meant, and I speak science. It reminds me of a line by a colleague of mine who used to say, the three primary products of science are confusion, controversy, and publication. And this publication apparently is adhering to at least two of those at the same time. So here's my take on that horrifically worded, jargon-filled paragraph. Microbial breakdown of methane into carbon dioxide, which is stored in permafrost, is proceeding, and stop me if you're familiar with this phrase, faster than expected. I've added this information to feedback number 31. Still waiting for a call, and if you don't do it, I'm going to quote more climate science from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which really is the publication that lately has been putting out a lot of publications that address abrupt climate change without actually admitting that the term exists.
Right. Because nobody in the mainstream media has clarified it yet.
Right. And if this doesn't trigger a call, then I'll have to assume that nobody is out there listening.
Right. Or nobody has a phone.
Maybe industrial civilization stopped
maybe
when we were on the show. Okay, here we go. The extinction of megafauna both at land and sea has led to a shortage of mega manure, according to a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences published October 26, 2015. As a result, the planet's composting and nutrient cycling system is broken. Other factors have contributed to extinction of large mammals, too, like humans killing them, but the role of megafauna poop in ecosystem function has been little studied in the past. The clever headline about this article at Live Science was, quote, no crap, missing mega poop starves Earth. See, scientists can have a sense of humor, too.
Science is funny, guys.
Oh, man. Funny as shit, as they say. Here's how it works. Death of large animals as a result of climate change causes additional planetary climate change, hence additional death of large animals. Thus is born irreversible self-reinforcing feedback loop number 55. Stop me if you've heard this one, but humans need a living planet to survive, and I hate to pick such low-hanging poop, but in the absence of mega-poop, the world is going to shit. And if you don't call now, there's got to be nobody out there. Come on. Get those lines ringing. That number again is 888-874-4888. Don't make me call your names. Also from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences comes a paper in the November 2nd, 2015 online issue. The abstract indicates that, quote, if the Amundsen Sea sector is destabilized, then the entire marine ice sheet will discharge into the ocean. This is an admission, quote, of self-sustained ice discharge from West Antarctica. I've added this information feedback number 14. Moving on. Because of rising carbon dioxide emissions, the Southern Ocean is acidifying at a rate that large regions may be inhospitable for the survival of key organisms in the food chain. This is likely to occur as soon as 2030, according to a paper in the November 2nd, 2015 issue of Nature Climate Change. What's this? Not 2100.
2030. Right.
It's always 2100.
It's not well, unless it's you, then it's 2030.
Yeah. It's amazing, and I don't know about you, but I'm a fan of food.
Food's good.
I've added this information to feedback number 23, and before I go on, we have a caller. Wendy from Ithaca, New York, is calling in. What do you got, Wendy?
Hello. I've got a question regarding the latest 1C above industrial baseline that has been in the papers lately and the media, and I was just wondering that 1C being admitted is kind of a big deal because, of course, we all know that that's not the full story. So what does that mean for the warming of the globe in terms of all the greenhouse gases and all the, you know, methane, whatever? Is that, in other words, does that figure mean it's higher again, or is it just that they're admitting it?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. It's an interesting observation embedded within that question or implied by that question. Thank you, Wendy. Although it sounds like you're from Australia, not Ithaca. Not that I'm going to pick on.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
Yes. So 1C was the scientific target established by the United Nations Advisory Group on Greenhouse Gases in 1990 as the threshold we absolutely could not cross, the absolute upper limit, or we were in real trouble.
The good old days.
The good old days, yes. And then before and after that, an economist by the name of William Nordhaus convinced people, and I don't know why an economist would convince anybody of anything. Talk about a dismal science built on a foundation of sand. William Nordhaus convinced people that 2C was the upper limit that we should not cross. In any event, yes, it has been recently announced that we're halfway to the danger level because we're at 1C, but we've been at 1C for a while. In fact, the average of the last 10 years, 2005 through 2014, is 1.07, I believe, and through July of this year, we're at 1.26 above baseline, and September and October have been the hottest Septembers and Octobers on record, so that 1.26 is fading into the distance behind us. So 1C was the absolute upper limit we could not cross. We crossed that apparently quite a long time ago, and the powers that be and the media are still trying to convince people that 2 is the problem.
Well, I see a pattern.
Really?
Once we blow past one of those
benchmarks,
there's a new benchmark.
Yes.
I'm good at this.
You've been paying attention, Mike.
Right.
Good for you. Mike gets a gold star for today's show.
I've actually seen someplace, and it was recently, and I don't exactly remember what article, but somebody was arguing that it was still possible to be around at 6C.
Oh, get out.
I'm kidding. I'm not kidding.
Humans?
Yeah.
There won't be a tree on the planet at 4C.
Yeah, but they weren't talking. You know, this is bunker time.
Oh, right. So. This is nuclear submarine?
Yeah.
Awesome. I got to get me one of those.
Right, right.
So. Thanks for the call, Wendy. Guy-O. Love the name Guy.
Oh.
He's calling from California. Guy-O, what do you got? You're on the air.
Hey, I just want to let you know there is somebody out here.
Well, thanks. You were just calling in to save my ass, weren't you?
Well, I figured this might be the last time I ever get to call the way things are going.
Well, this guy's a real doomer.
Oh, man. Well, with a name like that, would you
right,
expect?
Yeah.
So, hey, the thing with Bill Nye and Arnie, wow, I had to call because, you know, you'll be so famous soon that we won't even be able to get a hold of you.
Yeah, you won't be able to make contact with me after this because I'm somebody now.
I'll be filtering calls after this.
You are somebody now.
Sorry, Jeff. Thanks for calling in, Guy. I appreciate it.
Okay, man.
Okay. We have from Philly... We have a caller, Dries?
Yes.
I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. Can you tell us in?
Yes, it's Dries. You had it right. I almost had it right, yeah.
Thanks. What do you
guys
got for
us? Hey, Mike. Just wanted to say thanks once again for all the hard work you've been doing and keeping the conversation on the table. And I had a quick question about some of the, you know, the articles and things I've been reading in the past couple of weeks from guys like the guy that was on the same Nat Geo program that you were on with, Bill Nye, from, Stanford. I forgot his name,
Mark Jacobson. Mark Jacobson at Stanford.
Mark Jacobson, I believe. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Mark Jacobson. Guys like him and, the Australian climatologist, Tim Flannery. I mean, these guys are bringing discussions to the table in regards to, like, you know, solutions and, you know, I guess contraptions that can extract excess CO2 out of the atmosphere, according to these guys. But, I mean, something kind of struck me strange. I mean, these guys have never even mentioned how to address the methane issue and how that would, you know, ultimately affect, you know, the atmosphere, could potentially affect the atmosphere. And I was wondering, like, how come, you know, these guys, these experts, you know, even broach that conversation or even, you know, bring that on the table or even address it?
That's a great question. I'm going to let Mike take that one because I'm a little bit above the fray for that sort of question.
Well, isn't what J.
James Howard Kunstler calls magical thinking.
Yeah.
And you just address basically what you think you have solved. And then anything else that is brought up, well, you don't really know too much about that, and that's not your area of expertise, is kind of what I find, at least with guys like this.
And I should point out that essentially nobody in the climate science arena, including those two guys, is a biologist.
Yeah, we talked about this a few episodes ago.
That's right. So if you're an engineer, you think everything can be fixed by engineering a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mark Jacobson talks a lot about, quote, renewable energy, which is really derivative energy. It's all derived from fossil fuels. You think solar panels just show up without any energy involved,
right,
without any rare earths involved. And in addition, what Jacobson and many others failed to realize, and including Michael Mann, as pointed out to me by somebody who sent me some Facebook messages yesterday, is that we can't stop putting particulates up in the atmosphere by burning fossil fuel because of the global dimming that they produce. If we stop producing particulates and aerosols as a result of burning fossil fuels, then they all fall out of the sky, and then we lose global dimming, we lose the protective umbrella over us, and the planet heats up catastrophically quickly, very, very quickly. And remember that right now, according to the Refereed Journal literature, the climate change that is slow to this point is proceeding 10,000 times faster than native organisms can keep up. So, and we're in the very, very early stages of abrupt climate change. So, so we switch to solar panels and wind turbines. Then what?
Well, and we live in a culture, as our guest a few months ago, Stephen Jenkinson, called a death-phobic culture. We don't believe in death, and none of these guys and gals that come up with these magical thinking solutions believe in death as well. They believe in solutions. So we don't have predicaments in this culture. We are always solution-based, and we come up with some of the most absurd. I mean, the fact that this guy was from Stanford and he was on National Geographic, I think, covered his ass a little bit, because if you would have just put that out there, people that are thinking and are not maybe living in a death-phobic culture, it would have sounded ridiculous, like it does to most of us, because it is ridiculous.
Right. He started by saying by 2030 we're going to be doing X, X, and X, and by 2050 we're going to have this whole system powered by, quote, renewables.
Yeah.
Never mind that I can't imagine a situation that has humans on the planet in 2030, much less 2050. This is absurd. This is magical thinking.
But we don't believe in dying. That's a big part of it.
You know, there's that Neil deGrasse Tyson quote. It goes something like this. The cool thing about science is that it's true whether you believe it or not. It's the same with death.
Yeah.
The cool thing about death, I'm not sure it's such a cool thing. It happens whether you believe it or not. And
right,
we are a death-phobic culture, so we just don't want to have that conversation. Because as my signature line in the National Geographic episode says, it's a bummer.
It is a bummer. Smoke them if you got them.
There you go. Let's do a little more climate change update. We have Paul calling from Canada. What do you got, Paul? And would this happen to be our friend Paul?
It might just be.
Ooh, I can tell from that accent. It's about time you called.
Well, I called because when I was chatting with you the other day, I said I would call, so I got to stick to my word. I'm wondering how it is for the two of you, because you're both back in the mud hut doing the show at the same time, as opposed to one or the other of you being on the road.
Yeah, first time in a month, I think, is what we figured out.
Yeah, we figured in a month. It's a lot. It's better because we're not playing text tag and instant messaging, and it's tough because usually there's Guy someplace, and then I'm somewhere else, and then we have a guest who's somewhere else, and then we all call into a studio, and that person is somewhere else, too. So the fact that it actually gets pulled off is the miracle of industrial civilization.
That's right.
And we should be
well, there you go. And a comment as well, just, you know, we were talking about some of these others like Michael Mann, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems to always go back down to the fact that there's a paycheck involved. So none of them are going to go there as far as the near-term human extinction thing is, because if they go there, then they kind of probably are irrelevant and have to walk away from their position.
Or they're us. The three of us, unemployed.
They live in a tent.
They house sit, they live in a tent, or they just sit in a mud hut.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, I'll let you go. I'm sure you'll get a few more callers. Great to chat with the both of you, as usual.
Right.
And who knows, Mike, you might be right again. I might end up coming down there for another visit, so who knows.
Right on, man. Come on down.
Thank you, Paul, for the comment. We appreciate it. I'm going to move on to a little bit more climate update. Explaining Extreme Events of 2014 from a Climate Perspective was the name of a publication put out by the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society in their December 2015 issue. It's already been released. It draws on conclusions from 32 international teams of scientists who investigated 28 separate weather events. The report was released on Guy Fawkes Day. Mm. That's the 5th of November.
Remember,
the 5th of November. And it includes this conclusion, quote, human activities such as greenhouse gas emissions and land use influenced specific extreme weather and climate events in 2014, including tropical cyclones in the Central Pacific, heavy rainfall in Europe, drought in East Africa, and stifling heat waves in Australia, Asia, and South America. I've added this tidbit to feedback number 21. Al Jazeera America reports a ban on crabbing in California. This report is dated November 6, 2015, and here's the scoop. For the first time in memory, the California Fish and Game Commission this week delayed the recreational Dungeness crab season that was scheduled to begin Saturday for the area stretching from Southern California's Ventura County to the Oregon state line. The state has also suspended the rock crab harvest, which is normally allowed year-round. So, what?
What does it have to do with climate change?
There you go. Funny you should ask. High levels of domoic acid, a neurotoxin harmful to humans and other animals, have been found in Dungeness crabs along the California coastline. The toxin is produced by algae, which are thriving in warmer ocean temperatures. Mm-hmm. Abrupt climate change continues to disrupt the lives of non-human organisms and therefore the food supply of humans. Most people wonder when anthropogenic climate change will affect their lives. It already does, of course, but only for those of us who eat. Did I mention I'm a fan of food?
Food good.
Oh, man, I'm a huge fan.
Food good.
Yeah, we just ate lunch right before the show, so you wouldn't think it would be on our minds.
Could be our last lunch.
Can we get some ice cream while we're here? The United Nations Weather Agency's latest greenhouse gas bulletin was released yesterday, coincident with the release, which includes evidence that the concentration of greenhouse gases broke yet another record in 2014 for the 30th year in a row. The head of the World Meteorological Organization warned that the warming planet is hurtling, quote, into uncharted territory at a frightening speed,
end
quote.
I'm not sure about this climate change.
Come on. You sound like Bill Nye.
How many years in a row?
You're in 30 years.
31, I'll start buying it.
Wait for it. And this guy says, we really need to take action. He seems very concerned.
If we just start right now.
Yes. And that's what he said.
Yes.
We've been saying for many years that we need to start now.
Yeah, and I mean
says,
it.
And he says this time, well, I mean it.
And this time, I mean it.
Oh, the absurdity is amazing. Finally, and did I mention this is my final climate change update tidbit?
Wow.
So we're really waiting for those calls to come in, 888-874-4888. Finally comes a tidbit from the Department of Ultimate Irony. In an interview published in the November 2015 issue of The Atlantic, the world's richest man, Bill Gates, said that the private sector is too selfish and inefficient to produce effective energy alternatives to fossil fuels.
No.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Well, when it comes to selfishness in the private sector, Gates ought to know.
There goes our hope.
He could stand to go a step further, too, and point out that civilization itself is the heat engine at the root of this predicament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alas, baby steps will have to do for now. I suspect baby steps is all we'll get from Gates and his elk, whose concern about maintaining effective energy alternatives exceeds their concern about life on Earth. And both are exceeded by their concern about money in the bank. Their money.
Their
bank, of course. And we have a caller.
Whoa!
Saved again by Matt from Florida. What do you got, Matt?
Hello, guy. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. Bring it.
I can hear you now. Boy, I was looking on the internet and just discovered this article on grist.org that this country has spent $4 trillion on nuclear weapons. And I thought to myself,
It's either a long pause or you're gone.
You're really thinking about this to yourself. So I think I know the question, and so I'm going to answer the question, whether it's the question or not. But Matt sent me an email message earlier today,
okay.
And he says, what if instead of that spending that money on weaponry, mm-hmm. what if we immediately transition and start spending it on fixing climate change?
Mm. And not aware of the feedback loops?
Well, he is aware of the feedback loops a little bit, but in addition, the money is just printed.
Yeah.
You know it's an illusion.
Right.
Right? So
it's more the focus.
And that military is requisite to get the fossil fuels that we've used to keep the lights on in this country
right.
and to keep the oil flowing through the pipelines and on the rail so that we can drive around in this country. Oh, wait, Matt is back. So I'll let you answer.
Hey, guys, sorry for disappearing. It's like our connection was a little off. Well, the comment about $4 trillion being spent on nuclear weapons, and this is, as the L.A. Times was discussing it, and it just seemed like a tremendous waste of money and energy. But as you say, the $4 trillion even spent on improving the climate because society is a heat engine, this would probably be also a self-destructive process as well. This whole thing of trying to solve this problem has been really keeping me up at night, Guy, and I'm really kind of trying to come up with a solution. And I think if we just throw enough money at anything, we can solve it. And this is a situation where we can potentially take $4 trillion and not put it on nuclear weapons, but put it directly on climate change. How many hours do you think we could buy on the time clock by a $4 trillion investment?
I'm not a scientist.
I'm not a scientist, but I play one on PRN radio. money is not the problem. It's the misallocation of money over the last many years. Again, civilization itself is a heat engine, and if we keep civilization going, then we maintain the heat. On the other hand, if we turn off civilization, then we turn off global dimming, the protective shield we get from particulates, and particularly aerosols, and so we experience very rapid heating. So it looks like a case of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Your notion of sustainability is something I want Mike to address, because sustaining the unsustainable is basically what that has come to mean.
Yeah, I don't understand the idea of, or I guess the solution-based idea of, we've always thrown money at everything. That's what we've done. That's what we do. And this is where we are. So I don't understand that course of action continuing. I don't understand why we would follow that particular path when that's all we've ever done. And where has that led us? That's led us to this, which is a living arrangement that is unsustainable and that we are done, toast. It's over. Now it's just talking about it at this point.
Yes, we're in the dying time, as Stephen Chickinson says. So let's have that conversation instead of continuing to have the 5,000-year-old conversation
that's keeping you up at night
about fiat currency.
So, I mean, and I think we all, I don't want to speak for everyone, but we've all been in that particular place where you lay in bed at night and you think, oh, what if we tried this, or what if we did that, or what if this happened? And those things are
emblematic of stage three.
Well, yeah.
Bargaining.
They're bargaining, like the show, and then they go and we get past those, and some people still continue to bargain, like Bill Nye and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bill McKibben, and because we go back to the technology, which is what the money is thrown at to create.
Right, which is more of the same.
Right. So, quite frankly, at this point, I would be listening to the people we've always been listening to.
the wealthy white men who are responsible for
those would be the last people on Earth I would ever be talking to. I would be, and if they would even listen to us at this point, I would be talking to people that don't live like this. And there are very few left because we've wiped them out. Those are the people that people should be looking to as far as how to live a sustainable life over millennia.
I think you made a little Freudian slip there, Mike. You said the people we should be talking to. We've been talking at those people for a long
right.
time. Maybe those are people we should be listening to.
Right. So.
You're listening to Nature Bass Last on the Progressive Radio Network. And we're taking your calls, 888-874-4888. And in the absence of a call coming shortly, we're going to move on and talk about something else.
Well, I get the New York Times now, sort of by default. One of the ladies that lived down the road from both you and I.
Wait. Let's back up here. So you're a middle-aged white man reading the New York Times.
Right. I mean, I get it.
There's solutions there, right?
Right. No, but there's plenty of things to criticize. And it's full of nuggets. And one of the nuggets in the last month that I found, because I don't get it on a, you know, I don't get it when it's timely. I get it when it's 3 or 4 weeks old, was an article about the Greenland ice sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And read the first paragraph, and if the Greenland ice sheet completely melts, the models project that sea levels could rise 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the Greenland ice sheet.
Right, and it's not just the models. We have accurate observations, accurate measurements
right.
of how much ice is there on land.
And that's what this article was about, was actually getting to the surface and measuring the rate of melt by these rivers that are created.
Oh, right.
And cutting through the actual ice. And so what they were doing is they were measuring the velocity, the depth, the volume, and the temperature of these rushing rivers that are cutting through the ice like, you know, like a knife through butter.
Right.
And they figure they should have results. And really, what they're doing is they're trying to compare that on the ground with the models that they have to see if the models are accurate. So what they want to do is publish in about 3 or 4 months and see if the models need to be updated or adjusted.
Uh-huh. You mentioned the 20 feet, and that approximate 20-foot figure has been used for Greenland for a long time, the same number for the West Antarctic ice shelf. Mm-hmm. When, not if, when it all goes.
Well, that's the thing. It is. It's
of course.
When, but they never talk about when. It's always
right.
down the road, 2100.
Right. It's always a long time from now, and we can always fix it.
Right. With the going of money in it.
Using the same set of living arrangements we used to create it.
Right.
So it's 20 and 20 that I'd be willing to bet is locked in at this point. In fact, based on carbon dioxide levels of 385 parts per million, as reported by the Alliance of Small Island States at COP15 in 2009, we've already locked in at least 6 feet temperature rise and at least 20 feet of sea level rise.
And on your, if you remember on the show, the Explorer show, when they were showing the sea rise level in Florida, were they showing 3 foot or a foot rise? And they were showing the implications of just that.
Right. 1 foot rise.
1 foot rise. And it was, I mean, I forget how far inland it was going in particular places. I want to say 60-some miles at least.
Yeah.
And we're talking 20 feet here.
Well, there's a prediction out recently, again, a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, that predicts that Miami will be underwater by 2025.
Wow.
An article that ran in Business Insider a couple of years ago predicted Manhattan would be underwater by 2018. That's 3 years from now.
I think, yeah. Well, you should say 2017 and then 2024 for the Miami one. I'm just saying you'll get more attention that way.
Protect the time a little bit.
Right.
How about if I say next week?
Yeah. If somebody says next week, you say.
I think they'll notice then. All right, we have a caller, Barbara from Virginia. Barbara, you're on the air. What do you got?
I'm joining the show. You taunted me, so I had to call.
Is your husband there, or are you calling me on your own?
Pardon?
Is your husband there? You mentioned your husband sometimes listens with you, and you talk about
me. Yeah, no, he's at work again. He's always out and about.
Excellent.
I'm here.
We won't tell them about this.
Down. I've noticed up in the east of Greenland, about 2 days ago, there was a hot spot of 13.5 C above anomaly. I couldn't believe my eyes. It's just east of the Null School.
Right. The Null School model online. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. My thought was, is that coming up from under the earth? I mean, is there like, or is that the ocean flow leading into these hot spots? Because it seems like 3/4 of a round of this hot spot, it's cool ocean, but on the one side, the red indicating the higher temperature is flowing into this. So I wasn't quite sure how the dynamics work. Are you aware of those?
Only marginally, only based on what I've read within the last year or two. It seems that there is methane coming out from the mantle of the Earth, and that is rapidly heating ocean temperatures in that area. And
right.
13C, I've actually seen figures as high as 16C. This is areas of the ocean that typically are 0 degrees centigrade Celsius at the time of the year. Zero. Uh-huh. And now they're at 16. Wow.
It's a snorkel.
So let's everybody... That's new snorkeling.
I think your other caller doesn't... He's still in denial.
No.
No, really?
Let me throw a couple bucks at you. Maybe it'll change your mind.
Thank you, Barbara. We appreciate the call.
All right, we got Doug from Los Angeles. Doug hung up. Thanks, Doug.
Oh. Come on, Doug. Have a little patience.
Let's talk about the human cost here, because it's all about us. On the show, again, back to Explore, there was the representative from Florida, the denier.
Yeah.
And they were talking about sea level rise, and he said, well, people will just move inland.
Right.
And it seems to me that we're already experiencing, if anybody's been paying attention, a huge migration and refugee crisis in Europe. And it has to do with climate change.
Yeah, and it's not just Europe, it's New Zealand.
Right.
It's Australia.
So are those folks just moving inland?
You know,
they're finding a tough place to settle, it seems like to me.
That's the civilized way.
Yeah.
That's the patriarchal way is to burn up one place, use it up, exploit it to the maximum possible extent, and then move to the next place.
Right.
And we've been doing that for a few hundred years. And I think we're out of places to go.
Well,
there's no inland left.
No, and in particular, the United States, you know, the leading empire in the world, which jumps into these conflicts because we're protecting our interests, which means protecting the things that we can create stuff with and wealth. And we, God bless us, we're taking 70,000 refugees potentially this year, and within 2 years, up to 100,000. Look at us.
That's essentially zero, if
right.
I'm doing the math right.
That's a big football stadium, basically, of people. That's
right.
It.
Yeah. 100,000, that's not even a big foot. The Rose Bowl holds more people than that.
Yeah, and we're not even doing that yet. We're only at 70,000.
Right.
So.
Well, but what about that? Isn't there something on the Statue of Liberty? Give us your huddled map.
That's what it mentioned from the things I've been reading, is that we take all the hardship cases. Like, because they're not all hardship cases.
Oh, other countries are taking the rich white people.
Right.
And we're stuck with the poor people.
Right. We get the people who are being persecuted and things like that. So,
But who's doing the persecuting?
But the dictator we did put in power and kept in power for a long time, that person's doing the dictating, you know, persecuting. So,
it's really hard for me to keep track of this stuff.
Because it's constant.
If everybody would just wear their black hats and their white hats like they did in the good old days of movie making... I'd have this light easier figured out. That's all I'm saying.
Which leads into my next point. I read in the New York Times again, there was a study done by the University of Michigan in 2010 that found over a 30-year period through 72 different studies that there was a 40%, I'm not sure how they get they can measure this, but a 40% decline in empathy among college students, with most of the decline taking place in the last 15 years since the year 2000. And it seems to me that they kind of were attributing it in another article that was kind of related to the use of technology.
And so this 70,000 number, coming back to it, and this up to 100,000, to a lot of people, that's a big number. Like, oh, my gosh, good right. for us. Yay.
Right.
And, again, most of us will never see those people, that 100,000, because they're not going to be coming into your neighborhood or to your school system.
So as a point of reference, let's keep in mind that we add more than 200,000 people a day to the planet. That's
yeah.
birth minus death.
Yeah, last time I checked, it was 235, give or take.
And so we're taking fewer than a third of those
right.
as refugees into this country.
Well, wait, can I emphasize those that need it the most?
Okay, those that need it the most. Does that mean those who will use the least when they get here?
Yeah. And so...
Let's talk about this.
These articles continued that these students had no ability to place themselves in the shoes of other students. They were kind of robotic. And this consequence, obviously, is I don't find that just with college students today. I find that with many people that I butt heads with in the cyber world, particularly, again, white men. And a lot of times white men that I'm related to, but nonetheless, white men... Is that I think...
So you're admitting it's genetic then?
I think it's a disease. I think it's a psychosis.
Like Wetico?
Right. That this has been happening long before technology. I think technology has increased or has accelerated it. But this whole bootstrap individual, it's about me first mentality, the American dream, quote unquote, in our particular country, is just, if not more prevalent... than the technology. I think the technology probably takes it to, maybe accelerates it to another level.
Well, it certainly makes it easier to promote messages mm-hmm. that are consistent with American exceptionalism, for example.
Sure, which is a superiority, which is
of course.
Bigotry at its highest extent.
Right, right. And so the technology allows us to promulgate that message and hammer people over the head with it and therefore lose their empathy faster than we were able to do when we just had books and radio.
True.
Right?
Yeah. It also made an interesting point of talking about what technology does is it actually takes away our vulnerability. In other words, I would have thought, and it mentioned in the article too, that it would have... you would be more apt to put out ideas because you're anonymous in a lot of places than normal. And I'm not arguing that doesn't occur, mm-hmm. but what they found is that more people are self-conscious about what they put out as an opinion because of the feedback in some cases.
Oh.
Because of, let's say, your
Facebook... So they're afraid of being bullied.
Your Facebook friends might not agree with you, so you might be a little skeptical about putting something on your wall or something like that. And I found that to be the case a little bit when I started to go down this path.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teacher one day, and then the next day I was living out here. And when I started posting things, I was conscious about what I was posting because I just had students that were in the classroom with me the other day, and I wasn't necessarily... I was talking about these things, but I wasn't going into great detail because, you know, I needed to have a job at that point or finish my
right.
career up. So
right.
I can see how that happens.
Self-censorship is a big problem. There's a guy who wrote his PhD dissertation about the topic a few years ago, and he interviewed me and several other people when he was writing a thing and doing surveys, essentially, on how much we censored ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was everybody, essentially all the time,
right.
who has a job, always has that censor button on themselves so that they don't say things that they're really thinking.
Right. And unfortunately, you probably live 90% of your life that way in a lot of cases.
Right. Absolutely.
Because if you just follow the standard employment model of your life, typical American life or whatever, you will say you start working in your early 20s or in your late teens, and you work until at least your mid-60s.
Yeah.
So you're talking 40-some years
yeah.
of your life.
Most of your life.
And that, by that point, you're pretty much trained. So it's not like you, all of a sudden, when you retire, you're going to become some badass loudmouth.
Right, right.
Now you live in an HOA.
Right. You can't be a badass. Right. I'm a spokesperson living on HOA.
We can be, but that's usually just, you know, put your garage door down. And...
So you also mentioned that study or a study that described students that were asked to be alone for 15 minutes. With essentially no stimulation. They just have to look at a wall.
Or they could give themselves electric shock because they could not handle being alone with their thoughts. And many of them did. They would actually opt for the electric shock rather than sitting by themselves and sitting alone with their thoughts. And I've experienced this with adults, colleagues, that we used to run camps that would break down social barriers between students and teachers. And Camp 1 was kind of breaking down those social barriers and constructs, and Camp 2 was about kind of going within yourself and finding out the things that kind of are your hang-ups and the things that block you from being a potentially decent human being at times. And I had colleagues that did not want to, they couldn't handle being alone and couldn't handle going inside of what was inside them. I could tell this right away because they had trouble just being alone on their own all the time. If they were alone, they were on their phone and they were texting and they were kind of reaching out.
Right. Well, Louis C.K. does a great piece about, I think it's called Why I Hate Cell Phones, but it really has very little to do with cell phones.
And it doesn't start off like, it doesn't sound like a comedy piece, because it's really not, actually.
Right. No, it's not. Like most of the stuff he does,
right.
It's not funny.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Right.
Fortunately, most people don't think about
it,
so they can see the humor. And I was thinking of that the other day when I was on this camping trip, and I was driving through Phoenix, and so I'm checking my text messages and my Facebook on my phone while I'm driving through Phoenix. And some guy honks at me for a long time and pulls up beside me and honks at me, and he's yelling at me, really, really worked up, and his face is red, and he's yelling at me, and I'm checking my phone, and I look over at him and I hold up my index finger, just hang on a minute, I got to finish this message, and I went back to typing, and then he got really mad.
Well, you were going eight.
Well, yeah. But there was traffic.
Behind you, it backed up the flagstaff.
So, I mean, anyway, Louis C.K., the whole point of his little episode is we can't stand to be alone.
Right.
So we play our phones and we send text messages and we do anything, basically, to not be alone.
Yeah, and I'm not saying or implying that I am immune to this domestication and this indoctrination. Over the last 4 years, I've fought it a great deal, and I found myself, online a lot, and I found myself, I'm bored, I should just send a text, see how somebody's doing, or an email to see how somebody's doing. And instead of maybe going in my yard and looking at the mountains and chilling out and relaxing. And so that's something that I've really been unwinding for about 5 years now, and I still have a long way to go, so I don't think it's anything that you can just kind of snap on, snap off in this particular culture.
Right. No, absolutely not. It's difficult to be by yourself, and because you realize, as Louis C.K. pointed out, that inside there's just nothing.
Yeah.
That there's this big nothing deep down inside of you.
Speak for yourself.
That's a horrible thought.
But I have a nice nougat center.
Is it like the one at the center of the earth is where the oil comes from?
Right.
Yeah. A nice juicy nougat.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
So before we were talking about population, you mentioned the amount of people we add per year. You know, we've about 235,000 births minus deaths.
That's per day.
Per day, sorry. And so another piece of reading I came across was China. And they were talking about there are, by 2020, because everything's in the future,
right. There
will be 30 million bachelors without prospects because of the birth laws, quote-unquote, that China has had since 1979. In other words, if you have 30 million extra bachelors, it means you killed 30 million girls.
Right. So far.
And so an economist, I believe it was an economist, who else could it have been, came up with the idea that, we'll just let two guys marry one woman.
Oh.
So
polyamory is making a comeback.
So, and we've commodified women even more.
Yeah, right.
And they're doing this for the poor bachelors because they have no way of attracting a prospect. So if you can have a rich one marry somebody, that means the poor guy can still kind of get in on that and still have a wife.
So now the billboards in China say it's just as easy to marry a poor man as it is to marry a rich man, sort of the opposite of the American version.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and the reception to that message was mixed. A lot of the men loved it. The women not so much.
Yeah, imagine that.
And social justice groups not so much. And
well, you know,
human rights advocates not so much.
Right. I mean, the overshoot that we've been in since the first civilization arose leads directly to these kinds of predicaments.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a predicament in and of itself, and it leads to all these faux solutions to try to deal with various aspects of the predicament.
So how could we throw money at that?
So, different people?
I mean, I don't want to ride Matt here because there's a lot of people that have that same thought, but there's some things, I can see how people can think some things money can impact and can change things. Certain things, really?
Right.
Just being one of them.
Well, too many women or...
Not enough women in this case.
Not enough women. Well, money can fix that.
Yeah.
If you get enough money, you pay for your women. Just like people have done for generations.
Sure. Well, it can, but it's not going to adjust the number.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to kill a bunch of men?
We're still doing
that already.
Now you're already pushing off the poor guys again.
We're already killing poor people.
We need more war.
More war. What's the good for?
Yeah.
True. Right. We aren't killing enough with war, with conquest.
We'll have to get on that. Well,
maybe we can just wait just a little bit longer.
There is a war going on in California that most people do not know about, and that is the war.
I love this story. I can't believe you found this story.
Between electric car owners, there are not enough places to charge your car. So what's happening is people are pulling into these recharging stations, and then, you know, because it takes a while, so they'll go do something, and they'll come back, and their car's done. But somebody got sick of waiting, or there was nobody around, so they just unplugged their car. And so this is the new keying. You don't key somebody's car. You unplug it. And this article I was reading, it's the Tesla people. These Tesla folks, I don't know, it's a little shocking, but they have a little bit of entitlement going on that they're...
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
You drive a $100,000 car, you think you have some entitlement?
I was shocked as well. And I guess they're kind of the electric car bullies.
Rich electric car bullies driving Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Imagine.
And they shout profanities, I guess, when, you know, they have to wait.
They shout profanities?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
No,
are you kidding me? It's horrible.
We bleep that, hopefully, engineer guy. Thank you.
I guess I should provide a little warning.
So that's what's actually happening, and, you know, I guess that's this entitlement is one of the perks of being subsidized, you know. And part of it is this idea that, you know, I'm doing something good for the environment, so you owe me.
Right.
I'm driving a $100,000 car that goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, but it doesn't make any noise.
Right.
And it was only made from fossil fuel.
And it's electric, so what that means is I'm plugged into a coal-fired power station to run.
Right.
What could possibly be wrong with that?
Yeah, but most people don't realize coal is a fossil.
Most people don't realize a lot of things. There's a book called First Rule of the Wizard. And it's one of these elf books.
Mm.
You know, one of these
Hobbit
things. Yeah. Right. The First Rule of the Wizard is that people are stupid. I think that applies here.
Wow. It could.
You don't even need to read the book now.
And,
in fact, I would recommend not.
But I'm pretty sure, Guy, the coal is clean coal.
Yeah. Well, if it is clean coal, then it's not putting those particulates up there into the atmosphere that we need to serve as the global dimming umbrella.
Yeah.
So I think you're back to bargaining, Mike.
We're back to throwing money.
Yes, let's throw money. You're listening to Nature Bass Blast on the Progressive Radio Network. We're taking your calls for another couple of minutes. Anybody out there with a call can dial us up at 888-874-4888. That's a toll-free number.
Let's address we got another thing about the song.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
I didn't hear this. So
yeah.
They sent it to you?
They sent me, I got a message about the song and how the song really, well, it was a listener who wanted to share our show with other people. And they felt that the song kind of stopped people right out of the gate from listening any further. And I mentioned that the song, we like the song. We think it's kind of catchy. The song has kind of become a little bit of poking fun and kind of, you know, so we don't take ourselves so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, quite frankly, if they can't get past the song, they're really not going to get into the whole abrupt climate change, near-term human extinction predicament.
Yeah, if you turn off this episode because of the song, then I think you're maybe not ready to listen.
Sure, and if Afro's then writes something else and offers it to us, and that's another story, but I think the song is a little bit of a staple of the program now. Well, I mean, I understand people don't like it.
Yeah,
but
right.
People don't like us, so...
right. Yeah. Right. And so turn it off for 2 minutes.
Right.
Right, tune in at the 2 minutes after the hour mark.
Or just during the motherfucker part.
Right, there you go. You said it that time, and they didn't get to bleep it out.
Oh, damn it.
No, you're absolutely right. It's sort of maddening. I get that they don't like the song, but it's the best song we got. It was written for my work.
Right.
It's the song for Nature Bass Live on the radio. Come on. It's called Nature Bass Live. That's the name of the song.
Right.
How could we not have that? I'll tell you what. If somebody writes a song that's better, that's catchier, that doesn't have the word motherfucker in it, then fine. We'll consider playing that song.
Get on it, John.
On the air. So we're on the verge of the end of the show here. We're taking no more calls because we don't have time for you.
All right. Well, that wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bass Blast and the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bass Blast on PRN.FM. And feel free to post questions like Wendy did. Hey, you'd like us to address on the show, or you can call in like Wendy did. And please continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And we'll see you on the radio next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m., and we'll be taking your calls as well. And we'll be catching up with one of our guests who was riding his bike across America and asking, how will we live tomorrow? Thanks again to Afrozen. And until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
Nature Bass Blast.